HJL, let us ask my guide. Slowly the great white figure appeared, and, as its whiteness grew in intensity, RLW covered his eyes with his hand, and then sank to the ground. The sight of the majestic figure almost blinded me, but I was just able to bear it. Then the bell-like voice pealed out, "Those who deserve to be hurled into such surroundings will see them, and, since they must be very evil to go there, their guides will long since have fled from them. Therefore no help will reach them. This is the antechamber of hell. Though it is on the astral plane, seldom, if ever, does a man escape therefrom. Thence the road lies, through the valleys of hell, and so to the hill which leads to redemption. It is well that you should see these places, for they are springs from which flow so much that is evil both on earth and on this plane. As much as you can bear is revealed to you, and no more. The ordinary mortal passes through the earth plane even as your brother did, and the sees the newly slain still fighting as on earth, but the region where the evil powers well up is the antechamber of hell, and only after a time does the hardened sinner sink there. Just as those who grow better weary of the strife between man and man and wander away into the regions where you now are, so those who grow more and more evil sink away from the conflict with men into the conflict of the powers of evil, where these destroy their astral bodies and hurl them into that part of the spirit plane which you call hell." The voice ceased and he vanished, and after a while Rex recovered. Then I spoke to HJL. "What of those who wander away from the fight, yet after a while fall into the sin of obsession and so sink to hell?" "HJL, there are many roads to hell, just as there are many roads to the realms above. The regions of hate are the planes where the conflict between the powers is raging. Most of the sins of obsession fall under other headings, and so to hell, when the sinner has destroyed his astral body, but it would be quite possible to work back to that very strata via the road of obsession. There are many such cases where an astral obsesses a man to murder or worse. That astral will pass through the same Red Sea to hell. Remember, however, conditions are abnormal just now. Hate has seldom been so powerful or so active. Hence, though the officer passed into hell via that gateway, it left very little impression on his mind. But again we must separate after a few words of general conversation with Rex. I told HJL about Aunt. He expressed his concern and added, "I wonder where she will go? To the realm of belief without acts, I expect. Probably she will join company with H. Dot. I must try and help her on her way, but I don't suppose she'll remain any time on the astral plane, and I can't go to the plane above my own. I'm rather afraid, however, she'll vegetate in the division of faith without acts. That is the great difficulty there. The besetting sin of our sphere is ignorance, of the one above. Self-complacency. We do not suffer from self-complacency, so, once we are sufficiently developed to pass on, we go through the plane above fairly quickly. Belief, with acts, needs a lot of self-sacrifice. Yes, I'm rather afraid she'll stagnate for a time, partly because she'll be quite content to remain there. Well, you really must flee off." So I went, and as before, lost consciousness. Chapter 26, Women on the Astral Plane. August 4, 1916. On entering the room where RLW and HJL were, the former asked me, "Did you see any of those horrors you saw last time?" I replied I had not, I had merely passed through clouds and mists till I found myself in the street near the house in which they dwelt. "What do you do all the time?" I asked Rex. RLW, "Well, at stated intervals, I attend the course of lectures by the officer on conditions of life on this side. After he's finished we usually have a debate and end up by asking him questions, some of which he answers, but not all. Often indeed, he says that we have not developed sufficiently to be able to understand him if he did. There is quite a large class, and we use a sort of town hall that nearby. J.W. Are there no women here? Plenty must have died lately." HJLO, "Yes. On the whole, I think the sexes mingle more freely here than on my plane, but I try to keep Rex away from them. I don't think too much female companionship is good for him just yet. Come, We will go out and show you some of the fair sex. We all three went out into the street, and in due course came to a kind of small park. Here we saw large numbers of women, with a fair sprinkling of children. For the most part they seemed to be behaving very much as they would have done on Earth. The children played about at various earthly games such as tick, and their mothers sat and chatted. We noticed one woman who was seated by herself, hugging her child close to her. She seemed spellbound and gazed vacantly into space. There was a look of terror frozen on her face. H.J.L. and I both spoke to her, but she seemed not to notice us. Then Rex tried. She started, and cried wildly, "You are an English soldier. You wish to help us, you are too late. See. The beasts have set fire to the house, and two are waiting to bayonet us when we rush out. They killed my old mother like that, and my boy, but we shall remain here. The fire is more merciful than they. Can you not see them killing her? Oh, it is awful." We tried to soothe her, told her that it was all over and done with now, that there was no more death to fear since. Having died, she had won the victory over death, but she seemed not to hear us, and at last we gave it up in despair. We next talked to a couple of women. They told us that they had been killed by a shell. One said, "There was a terrific crash, and then darkness. By degrees we recovered, and called to each other. At first we thought we were unhurt, but entombed. Then we saw other creatures, frightful in shape, and in terror we ran screaming away. After a while we saw other people in crowds, and joined some of them. Presently, amid the gloom, we heard someone preaching, as it seemed, and when we got there we found he was telling us that if we would follow him we should come out of this darkness into light, and be among more pleasant surroundings. So we, and many others, followed him, and he took us a long journey. Often we began to tire of it and wished to turn aside, and indeed, many did, but ever he urged and prayed us to follow him, and at length he brought us to this town. Here we were lodged in an abbey where I found the abbess was one whom I had known on earth. We have dwelt here some time, and are gradually beginning to forget the horror of the last few weeks of our life on earth. They explain a lot of things to us in the nunnery." We left them after a few moments more conversation and returned to the house, talking of domestic matters. H.J.L. inquired about Aunt, and I told him she was no worse, at any rate. I then told Rex and H.J.L. that I was so hard worked just now that, for the present, I thought it would be best if I only came once a week. To this they agreed, and I left them, deciding to keep to Mondays. Chapter 27, A Vampire. August 7, 1916. On reaching H.J.L.'s house without any unpleasant adventures, I suggested we should again go out and inquire among the women as to the life here. H.J.L. agreed, and we once more made our way towards the park. As we passed down a narrow street, two women and a man came out of a house. One of the women promptly grabbed Rex's arm, and said, "Hello, old chap. Come for a walk with me." RLW looked somewhat embarrassed, and said, "I don't know you." She, "That does not matter, you soon will," and laughed. "It just shows what a lot you've lost. How long have you been here?" RLW turned to me. "How long is it, Jack?" J.W. "About 3.5 months. RLW "Yes, I suppose it is not more than that, though it seems longer." She, "Oh. You want someone to show you round the place. I am here 20 years, and can put you up to a good bit." H.J.L. here intervened. "I think, Rex, we must be getting back home." She, "Well, cut off you other two. I didn't invite you, but I'm going to do the decent thing by one of our noble defenders. Come along, Lieutenant RLW. You see, even if you don't know me, I know you." She smiled wickedly. H.J.L. took Rex's arm, and said, "Come along, my boy." And Rex, somewhat reluctantly, obeyed. Safe back in our own house, H.J.L. explained as follows: "That woman is one of a band of very dangerous vampires, who for years have battened on the living, and have lured many of the dead, to follow their vile example. By means of obsession, they are able to enjoy a kind of Dead Sea fruit pleasure. Later, they will pay for their fleshly joys with much suffering. Already I can see it is difficult for her to keep hold of her astral body. Soon she will sink down into Helland. My boy, turning to Rex, if you had gone with her, like Flat Man who was with her friend, you would have been fairly started on the downward path. So, after a little more conversation, we parted once more. Chapter 28, RLW brings in a comrade. August 14, 1916. On arriving at the house I found Rex, all on his own, had brought in a man from the battlefield, and the officer, who was just taking charge of him, was very pleased. "See," he cried, "how much nearer your guardian angel has drawn to you." And as he spoke, I became aware of RLW's guardian angel afar off, but plainly visible. Rex too, saw him and, though the figure vanished immediately after, I could see he was delighted to have caught even so fleeting a glimpse. The officer then went out, taking the newcomer with him, but HJL and RLW remained with me. RLW told me how he had gone down into the region near the fighting line with the officer, and the persuaded one of the officers of his regiment to come away with him. He admitted he did not like much having to do it, and added, however, the officer said I must now help someone who was nothing to me when I was on Earth. I had liked the adjutant, but this chap belonged to a different battalion, though he was a York and Lancaster man. The officer says I shall have to help someone I hated. I hope it won't be a German, anyway. The worst of it is, I can't remember anyone I really hated on Earth, except the Germans in general. Look, I've adopted a poor lost cat I found near a house which was slowly rising from its ruins near the firing line. J.W. I suppose it was really being destroyed on Earth by gunfire. RLW. Yes, I suppose so. Well, I found a poor little tabby pussy wandering about as if quite lost. It had evidently just been killed, so I adopted it. See, here it is. As he spoke, he pointed to a small tabby cat which jumped down from a sofa and began to rub itself against his leg. I distinctly heard it purr, then said, "How's the mater?" W. No worse, I think. My father went over to see her recently and told me that she was not so bad as he feared from what I had told him. I feel I ought to be getting back now. I then went out of the hall door after saying goodbye, down the street into the country, into a thick fog, and lost consciousness. Chapter 29, Husbands and Wives. August 21, 1916. On reaching the house I found Rex and HJL playing chess. I watched the game till it was finished, which did not seem to take long, and Rex was, of course, beaten. After this we fell to talking of various matters of a private nature. Rex told me that he had met a number of acquaintances. He added that they mostly seemed to have gone through similar experiences to those he himself had experienced. He then continued, "We went to a church the other day. It was a Roman Catholic church, and was in charge of a delightful old priest. He had a large congregation, and the whole thing was very like a service on Earth." HJL then took me on to another church. It was a fine building in its way, and also came from Belgium. But the priest in charge was a very different sort from the last. His congregation consisted largely of women, and with some of them on Earth he had been entangled, and still was. Nor did he seem in the least ashamed of it. Stranger still, though the women were furiously jealous of each other, they had not a word of reproach for his misconduct. Indeed, they seemed to me to consider it perfectly natural. Wherever he went he was followed by a crowd of adoring females whom he bullied at times, but more often encouraged an extreme sentimentality. He was very dogmatic and conceited, so much so that he really, I think, believed he was a pattern and an example for all mankind. He quarreled with most of the men he met because they did not pay him sufficient respect, and the last I saw of him he was undergoing a good thrashing from a couple of French soldiers. After leaving this scene, I saw a man walking along and looking most dejected. He was followed at a short distance by two women who were quarreling the whole time. L got into conversation with him, and he explained that on Earth he had married a second time on the death of his first wife. His second wife had been killed at the same time as himself by a shell, and his first and second wives had quarreled ever since, as each claimed him as her husband and neither was willing to share him. He appealed to us for some solution of the matter, adding that he would gladly be without a wife at all, but this was the point on which they did agree, and when he suggested it, turned their wrath upon him instead of each other for a while. We left him, as we could see no remedy except that they should share him, which they did not seem willing to do. Then HJL took me to see another case. This man had had no less than three wives, but instead of quarreling with each other, they had united to keep him in subjection, and seemed like succeeding. I then saw another case where a man had married two sisters, and was living quite happily with both. Next I was introduced to a man who confessed that, at present, he was quite happy with his first wife, but dreaded the day when his second wife should arrive on the astral plane. For then, he said, trouble will begin, I know. After him I met a man who was worried because his only wife had preceded him into the spiritual plane, and, owing to the materialistic life he had lived on Earth, he feared he would never be able to catch up with her again. You see, he explained, she died 20 years before I did, and was always of a more spiritual type than I, so she had a long start. We also saw a woman who was searching for her husband, but had not yet found him. She confessed that she had heard that he had greatly degenerated since she died, and she feared he had drifted into one of the worst portions of the astral plane. Well then, it's time you were off, Jack. One gets some curious problems over here, does one not? W. Yes, indeed. It reminds me rather of the East. But what about the biblical saying, they neither marry nor are given in marriage? Perfectly correct in the spirit plane, but not entirely so on the astral, which, after all, is partly material. But there is no marriage in the grosser sense even here. That is why misguided souls fall into the sin of obsession. But now you must be off. So we parted. Chapter 30, News of the Passing of Mrs. H. J. L. August 28, 1916. On reaching the house where X lived, I found him alone, and he at once said, H.J.L. has gone off to the spirit plane to meet Aunt Jane, as she has died. He suddenly sensed her presence passing through the astral plane. I saw nothing, but he went out at once, saying, however, that he would return as soon as he could. Beyond that, I can tell you nothing. You might give me any details you know. I did briefly, and then said goodbye, explaining that I was going to follow him. I therefore returned to my bed, on Earth, and there my astral form seemed to slide away. At once I felt myself delightfully free, and sped upwards through the air. I saw nothing of the astral plane, but almost at once found myself on the familiar hill overlooking the college in which HJL had dwelt on the spirit plane. I hurried into the college, and entered his rooms, but found no one except Molly, the dog, who welcomed me effusively. So I sat and waited a long time, till, suddenly, HJL entered. HJL, I could feel you calling, so have just come over for a few words, but must return almost at once. Your aunt passed through the astral plane with hardly a check. She is now, as it were, on the edge of this division and of the one above. There for a minute, she is pausing, and I of course, cannot go on beyond. She is in a rather dazed state, but she recognized and was glad to see me. Miss E and H have come to meet her. As she will soon pass on, I must hurry back to say goodbye. I am sorry I can't go with her, but I expect it is best so. I shan't be entirely cut off from all news of her, as I keep in touch with P. She has not yet begun to see her whole past life, as I did, but soon will. Now, goodbye for the present. He went out, and, as there was no further use in my remaining, I returned to Earth, and entering my body, lost consciousness. September 4, 1916. I went straight to the astral plane, and found HJL in the house. Rex was out. HJL, yes. I'm back here, as you expected. Your aunt found quite a large number of people she knew on Earth, including Old A. These came to meet her, and after saying goodbye to me, she passed into the division above mine, and so we parted. Old A assured me that she was very happy, and wished that I could come too. I felt rather out of it, and indeed glad I couldn't. The people, though they had improved, seemed to me to be very similar to what they were on Earth, and the atmosphere was rather uncongenial. However, it will suit your aunt splendidly, and that is the main thing. She went straight off to a church of which he is parson, to offer her thanks for her safe passage from your world to ours. Since then I've been back with Rex, helping him to help others. He is getting on well. We continued to talk about private matters for a short time, and presently Rex entered. He assured me he was getting down to the life on the astral plane, and then went on, "We seem to be doing very well on the front, and it's leading to a tremendous influx of newcomers. The adjutant has settled down to life here and is one of our band of workers who try to help those who pass over. I don't like a good deal of the work we have to do, but my guide says it is good for me. By the by, I'll see my guide fairly regularly now, but I can't bear his presence for long." We talked about various private matters for some while longer, and then parted. Chapter 31. The Ideal Garden. September 12, 1916. On arriving at the house they occupied, Rex said, "We are going out for recreation. Like to come too?" So HJL, RLW and I set out together, and, after passing through some pretty country, came to a beautiful house in a lovely garden. It was set back from the road and in pleasure grounds of considerable extent. They were surrounded by a hedge of yew, carefully clipped, which appeared about 8 feet high and completely arched the gateway, which had a gate wide enough for a carriage to pass through. J.W. The gateway is wide enough for a carriage, but the coachman would be knocked off the box. H.J.L. Yes. I don't think, however, any carriages ever pass through this way. On entering we found broad beds, about 10 feet deep, full of lovely flowers of every kind that are found in June in England. They were mostly herbaceous, though a few bush roses were to be seen among them. At the back of the beds, on either side, were yew hedges about 6 feet high. This path was about 100 yards long, and at the further end was a square pond, edged with flat stones. The edge of the stones, which were moss-grown in parts, overhung the walls of the pond by about 4 inches, and the water was about 9 inches below the surface of the ground. Diagram of the Ideal Garden, see web book in PDF. The drive turned sharply right and left and ran parallel to the pond at a distance of 5 yards. Round the pond itself were clumps of iris and other plants, and the rest of the space was filled with turf of an exquisite, velvety texture and beautiful green. In the pond itself were many water lilies, and in the center a dolphin reared up and spouted a jet of water. On the further side of the pond was the house, which appeared to be a 16th century building, made of stone, with mullioned windows. The drive ran right round the pond, always at the same distance from it from the drive itself. Halfway between the gate and the pond on either side, was a short path about 4 feet wide, leading to a gateway in the hedge. This gateway was likewise arched over with yew, but whereas the main gateway arch had its top flush with the top of the hedge, this had the arch raised but cut square. There were 2 arches similar to the one we had entered by, one in the middle of the side parallel to the outside road, and one opposite. The former led into the drive where it turned round to the left, so we passed through the arch opposite. Here we found people. There were 4 of them, 2 men about 50, one about 30, and the last a youth about 18 or thereabouts. H. J. L. at once asked them, "Who lives here?" And one replied, "Miss H. H. J. L. Who is she on earth?" "Someone of wealth and position?" "The gardener?" "No. She was, I believe, a woman of good birth, but poor, and all her life she longed for and dreamed of a house and garden such as this. She died at the age of 35. I have heard from her own lips how, though compelled to live at Tooting, she used to be always planning the kind of house and garden she would have if only she were well off. Now she has it." "H.J.L. Why do you work here?" "The gardener." "Because we like to do so. Three of us were gardeners when we were on Earth, but Charles, pointing to the man of 30, was a clerk. He always hankered after a garden, so drifted in one day and has remained ever since, J.W. And do you have to tend these plants, and cut the grass and so forth, as on Earth? The gardener. There is not the same amount of drudgery as on Earth. These are the astral forms of plants that have died on Earth. In time their astral bodies wilt away, the grown thin and wan, like that rose. Then a puff of wind scatters them, and they vanish into fine dust. See? As he spoke, a rose bush in the rose garden we had just left, which looked so thin that we could almost see through it, vanished in a puff of smoke. The gardener. We'll have to put a new one there now. I noticed that there was a large collection of plants lying ready to hand behind a yew hedge which formed a square. J.W. How do the plants come here? The gardener. They simply appear here. I never see them coming, but I'm constantly finding fresh ones. I just plant them where I think they will look best. I think they have a sort of instinct, and come where they will be welcome. This plant dump was well hidden by a yew hedge, but it was, nevertheless, a beautiful picture in itself, very different from the rubbish heap which would have been similarly placed on Earth. The garden here was full of chrysanthemums and other autumn flower plants. The gardener broke in with, "Yes. We've a garden for every season of the year, and many other gardens as well. Next to this is the winter garden, though there is no winter here." Miss H. insisted on its being made, as it was always her dream to have a garden for each season. We passed through another arch, and found a garden with a grass lawn in the center, and round the sides, near the hedges, were broad borders full of evergreen shrubs. Many of them had silver and gold foliage. Others had masses of berries which looked like blooms at a short distance, so large and fine were they. I had no idea such a variety of colors was possible. There were masses of white berries and of yellow ones, scarlet, deep red, purple, blue, and almost blackberries. I asked the gardener, "Have you tropical gardens here as well?" The gardener. "No, Miss H. says that she wants to keep to a strictly English garden, and I agree with her. Not that these tropical plants are very fine, but I prefer our own plants. They seem more home-like. Have you seen the sweet herb garden? It smells beautiful." He pointed to an arch in the top hedge, and we passed through into a garden full of marjoram, thyme, lavender, and countless other herbs. Then he came to the rock garden, and beyond it was a garden with bedded out plants, but instead of going into this we came out again onto the drive near the house. "Shall we call?" said Rex. "Let's glance at the gardens on the other side," said H.J.L. "Jack will have to return soon." The gardener. "All around this house, as you see, are lawns with beds of midsummer flowers. Look. We found at the back the house had a terrace with stone balustrades, and three flights of steps leading down to a fine lawn. This also was terraced, and bounded on its lower side by a wall level with the grass, from the crevices of which rock plants and creepers grew. The wall was 5 feet high and had a bed of herbaceous plants in front of it, and another lawn beyond which had a grass slope. At the foot of all were lovely orchards in full bloom, and from the terrace by the house, where countless wallflowers bloomed, one could see a lake stretching beyond the orchard, and hills beyond the lake. We turned back past the house. On the right of this as one faced it, and therefore corresponding with the bedded garden, was what the gardener described as the sunk or Dutch garden, and next to it opposite the rock garden, was a garden full of quaintly cut yews, and centering round a bowling green, with an exquisite little summer house and sundial. "Here are the flowering trees and shrubs," said the gardener, and we found ourselves in the garden opposite the herb garden. Grouped round a circular lawn were flowering trees of every description, while on the lawn itself were dotted about the smaller flowering shrubs. The air was laden with the scent of the lilac and may, but there were several trees in full flower which on Earth would have hardly sown a bud when May trees were in bloom. The gardener. "As I gather you must be returning soon to Earth, let me show you the lily garden, and excuse me asking you, but you three gentlemen seem different. You, sir, addressing Rex, appear to be one of us, and as you are a soldier, I'll presume you are one of those who have fallen in the Great War, of which a rumor has reached us even in the peaceful glades. Rex nodded, and he went on to me.